He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Good evening, all. Welcome back to Solutionsology Radio. On the heels of the amazing conversation I had last night on gullibility and foolishness with Dr. Stephen Greenspan and his book, The Analysis of Gullibility, and the upcoming book, The Anatomy of Foolishness, tonight we're going to be talking about something that I've talked about extensively on the show, but not as much as I had wanted to. It's not as in-depth as I've wanted to in the past. And tonight we're going to be doing a whole segment on it, which is on women in the world of business and success and being able to have opportunities and being granted opportunities. This is not going to be a pandering session. I want to make that crystal clear. Joining me now is the author of Earning It. It just came out yesterday. She's very excited about it. I'm very excited about it. She is Joanne Lublin. She is the management news editor at the Wall Street Journal. She's also part of a journalist team that was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for exposing corporate scandals. Again, incredibly excited for you for the book and because you're on the show tonight, Joanne.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So, an introduction there, and you deserve nothing short of that. Probably could have went for another few minutes before actually fully introducing you. But again, congrats on the book. And it's something that you've actually been working on, at least mentally, for a long time, going back
to the
70s when you're working on your thesis and serving people. So let's go backwards in time and let's talk about that part of it, because this is something that obviously hasn't gone away, has changed, but not to the degree that we expect it to in the next 5 to 10.
Right. Well, I did do a master's thesis on the whole question of, is there discrimination against newspaper women? I never in a million years thought I'd ever write a book that had anything to do with journalism or women in the workforce, that was for sure. But what that master's thesis did prove was that women who work for men, and all the women that I covered in my master's thesis did work for men, none of them worked for a woman, but all the women who worked for men who had ever... If the man had ever had worked for a woman, he was less likely to discriminate against his reporters. And there were a couple of newspapers like that where the publisher died and the widow took over the small daily newspaper, and the city editor, managing editor, whoever was the male editor that answered that part of my thesis questionnaire, did not discriminate as much against these women in terms of their assignments, in terms of their pay, in terms of their status in the newsroom. So that was basically what my thesis found.
Now, when you joined the Wall Street Journal, which you saw today, there were only 11 women out of the 150-person staff.
Right.
Yeah, so literally a minority amongst obviously the working class. So how was that? How was the tenor of the conversations back then, the mood, the idea, the culture, the flow, things like that?
Well, I do remember a colleague in New York writing a letter, because, you know, there were no such things as email back then. And she sent me a letter saying, you know, we have to stick together because there aren't very many of us. And of the dozen or so women in the news department, there was only one who was above the level of staff reporter. She was a copy editor. She fell in love with a male editor at the paper, and the paper gave the couple a choice. You know, we have a nepotism rule. You can't both work here. One of you has to quit, and we think she should quit. So she did. She had to quit. And that was kind of like the way things were at the Wall Street Journal at that time.
Yeah, obviously a lot has changed since then, although not to the degree that
goodness, but not enough, unfortunately.
Exactly. I agree. And again, tonight's show is all about, it's about detail. It's about this book, Earning It. It's about the different sections in the book. What I like to do, Joanne, is I like to actually pick out certain areas from the book and actually read from certain parts of it as well. But right now I want to go to the chapter of Doors Open with a Strong Push and the specific section of that chapter, The Serendipitous Stranger. You're talking about Liz Smith here, who's leadership brands. And I mean, there's quite a few interesting stories here, but let's talk about her rise from back office administrative role at Morgan Stanley to the timely conversation that she had in an elevator with a stranger. Most people don't talk to elevators and strangers. It's just awkward. But it turned out to be a great conversation because the guy lent an ear, and he ended up being the senior VP at Payne Webber. And let's talk about where she is today and everything that's happened along that way, mentoring, you know, male mentors and, you know, everything else that you wrote in the book later on. Let's tie that in together a little bit here in her story.
Sure. So Liz Smith is somebody who got out of college, majored in English, wanted to become a novelist, and at one point in that chapter I said if someone had told the newly minted graduate in 1985 that someday she would run a major public company, which she does, her quote was, I would have laughed and thought that was absurd. Yeah. But the irony is her father already was a CEO. He ran an early maker of personal computers called Commodore International. And you have to be pretty long in the tooth to remember Commodore International. But he thought she should go get a job and make some money before she earned a doctorate in English, which was her dream. Get the doctorate in English and then, you know, write novels. But she couldn't find a job, you know, in publishing, which was where she thought, you know, she would make some money. So do you want to take up the story from there?
No, I'd like for you to continue because
I think it's a great
story here. Yeah,
okay.
Please.
So what happened was she took a back office sort of, you know, temporary, you know, she thought it would be a temporary position while trying to get this meaningful position in publishing. She had a Phi Beta Kappa degree, but only thing people wanted to hire her for in publishing was to be an executive assistant, and she couldn't pay to even rent a closet from a friend, being an executive assistant and typing. So one day in 1986, she decided to go visit her brother, who was a Payne Weber broker, because she was hoping she could use his copier and print out her resume. He worked in Midtown Manhattan on 6th Avenue, and, you know, it was a long elevator ride, luckily, and a local elevator, and she just started chatting with a guy in the elevator with her. They were the only people in the elevator. He was wearing a very expensive suit. He had a starch white handkerchief, and he seemed sort of mildly amused to see this young woman who was wearing flip-flops and jeans, you know, in a very fancy office building in Midtown. So he said to her, well, where are you going? She explained that she had just graduated from college, wasn't really sure what she wanted to do, but kind of felt frustrated, put it mildly, about her inability to find a decent job in publishing. And she was essentially pretty honest about how bad things were for her. Well, luckily for her, this stranger in the elevator was, as you mentioned, a senior vice president at Payne Weber. He was a big power broker in the brokerage division. And she suspected that he had probably run into a lot of, you know, very uptight go-getters who were all very well dressed up and tried to impress the heck out of him. The other thing, of course, that helped is the man knew her brother. So he urged her brother that she should apply to one of their training programs, helped arrange an interview for her, and she got chosen for a two-year financial analyst program, which she did then take, even though she was one of the very few people in the program who didn't have an Ivy League degree in business or economics and internships. I mean, this was an English major from the University of Virginia. She was going to be the great American novelist. But, you know, she did very, very well. It turned out she loved investment banking. She did all kinds of interesting deals, even did a deal for financing an NBA team. And so she kind of dropped her dreams of getting that doctorate and writing a great American novel and went for an MBA. And she's not a household name, but I think the company she runs, a lot of your listeners may have heard of. It's a company called Bloomin' Brands, and they own such little-known brands of restaurants as Bonefish Grill and Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, and obviously that's why I wanted you to tell it because, you know, your direct relationship with this and your closeness to the story, and there's so many great ones in the book. Once again, I'm speaking with Joanne Lublin.
Dozens and dozens and dozens.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And again, I'm speaking with Joanne Lublin. She's the management news editor at the Wall Street Journal, which is a lot more progressive in the way that they hire women today, which a lot of companies are, which we'll talk about soon.
Sure.
Continue that. She was also part of the journalistic team that won a Pulitzer Prize for exposing corporate scandals. So obviously, incredibly accomplished, such as yourself. You've done so much. You've been around people who've done so much. And I know a lot of people focus on Sheryl Sandberg. Obviously, you mentioned it in here. It's mentioned all over the place with Lean In. Nothing wrong with that. But there's a lot that's not focused on that goes beyond more of the marketing push and the actual push itself is being the person trying to get there and creating a presence, specifically that word I want to focus on, and creating an aura about yourself. And this is taking directly from chapter 12 for those keeping score at home. You convey an aura of leadership if you know the part, act the part, and look the part. That is a great statement there, a great train sentence. I like to focus on presence as a whole here because we read about and we hear about power positions and things like that, talking with your hands, not talking with your hands. Use a pointer, don't use a pointer, do this, do that. You, wear a skirt, wear a pantsuit, wear a tie, wear the, all that stuff. It all comes into an appearance and a presence and perceptions reality in many respects. So let's talk about that and the difficulty it is for women to be able to convey that and be able to get respect for dressing a certain way or acting a certain way, and how to actually do it successfully and what we've seen women do successfully.
Yeah, I think unfortunately women have more choices and fortunately as to how they dress, but unfortunately I think women are also judged more harshly in terms of being taken seriously. I thought Denise Morrison, who is the chief executive of Campbell Soup, another company none of your listeners probably ever heard of, really put it very well in my list of leadership lessons at the end of that chapter. I pointed out that, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, presenting yourself professionally makes a difference. And what Denise said was, if you are not well-dressed, she said, and quote, you're standing next to the guy in the crisp suit, you don't stand a chance. And then Denise added, people are human. They're going to respond to packaging. And, you know, who better understands the importance of packaging than the chief executive of Campbell Soup?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, we one of the things that women have to battle with, and this is a guy saying this, but I see this all the time. I always stick up for people, whether it's a female, male, minority, whatever it might be. I think all people deserve the same opportunity to be looked at as a person and not as a gender or as anything like that. That's the way
sure.
I think, and I'm on the radio saying that. That's just the way I live my life. I have noticed that women, when they give orders or they delegate, they're looked at as bossy. I know that word gets a lot of people really like get a lot of amygdala hijack when they hear that word. But let's talk about that and why there's that perception as soon as a woman starts to exert some sort of authority or power, even if it's done in a really polite and nice way, comes off as curt and terse and bossy and a jerk.
Yep.
Or perceived that way.
Unfortunately, that's part of something that's known as unconscious bias, perceptions that we probably don't really think we have, but we really do. And I think women sometimes view aggressive women as bossy as much as men do. I cite in that particular chapter on executive presence a survey of nearly 4,000 U.S. professionals that included 268 senior executives. It was done by a think tank called Center for Talent Innovation. And the woman who runs that center has actually written an entire book on executive presence. That's Sylvia Hewlett. But in any case, 31% of those in that 2012 survey said that, quote, being too bossy, close quotes, undermines a woman's executive presence. But on the other hand, the same percentage of people who were surveyed said being too passive also undermines their executive presence. So, you know, women are worried about how they can look decisive and assertive and hold their ground because, as Sylvia said to me, you risk being perceived as a bitch or non-cooperative. and made that point in her book as well, obviously. And so I think women, even today, younger women face this all the time. They want to be taken seriously. They do not want to be seen as bossy. And you really need to get some coaching in executive presence. I highly recommend it.
And you mentioned Campbell Soup before, Joanne, in chapter 15, Male Champions of Women, just so we understand that women are not, at least today in today's world, they're not completely on their own. There's obviously a lot of men championing it. You referenced
Absolutely.
Conan.
Absolutely. Women would not be where they are in major corporations today if there weren't men who were their big advocates. And Doug Conan epitomizes that.
Yep,
in
he was a guest on my show.
In 2011, Doug Conant ended 142 years of men in the corner office at Campbell Soup, which is the largest soup company in the United States and a company that has always catered overwhelmingly to women. And he was Denise Morrison's champion.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a ton of examples of that. Obviously, a lot of them don't get light for one reason or another. It's just, especially now, we have kind of in the shadow of a major debate tonight, the third debate between the presidential nominees. But this is very important. A lot of people doubt and are listening now. But I do want them to know that there are a lot of champions out there. Let's highlight just a few of them. We mentioned Doug Conant before. Again, a former guest on my show, too. So I have a lot of closeness to this. But people that you've seen do an exemplary job that haven't been highlighted or haven't been given the spotlight that they deserve for going out there and doing it. You know, this is a pretty big deal.
There's another man that I write about in that Male Champions of Women chapter who I don't think is very well known. But he too epitomizes what contemporary men are doing on behalf of women. He's a man named Ed Zimmerman. He's in his early 40s. He's a lawyer. He works in the testosterone-laden world of venture capitalists, as I put it. Obviously, he uses social media a lot, but he's also very, very publicly outspoken of something they're known as mannels, which is a made-up word to describe panels that only have men on them who are experts at conferences and other business events. And so what he did was, on the spur of the moment, he decided to make a public pledge at a conference he was leading in New York in the spring of 2014. And basically he said that he would not participate on such panels unless they made a good faith effort to have a meaningful representation of women. And he also said, do not invite me to any sizable business dinner, lunch, or drinks outing unless you include women. And at that time, he was writing an occasional online column for a blog at the Wall Street Journal. And so in addition to going public with this at the conference, he then did the same thing on his blog. This whole idea of opposing mannels has actually taken off outside of the U.S., not as much here. But there is actually a website that was started by an artist in Finland, and she then migrated it to a Tumblr blogging platform to basically shame events where they had only men as excerpts, okay? And she called her blog, Congrats, You Have an All-Male Panel, and she invites people to send in pictures. And so I studied her blog for days on end, and some of these pictures were amazing. Like, there was a picture of a panel, six men, not a single woman, and this was at the Global Summit of Women in June 2014 in Paris, whose mission is to expand women's economic opportunities around the world. But they couldn't find a single woman to be on their panel.
Yeah, how ironic, isn't it? So there's so many great stories in this book. Again, we were talking about the book Earning It tonight. It just came out yesterday, so I'm incredibly excited to be part of the tour here. And again, it's Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women at the Top of the Business World. Joanne Lublin's shining a light on so many great stories there, including her own experiences surveying, writing her stories, and everything that you've done on your side as well has been incredible. And partially because it's getting elevated because we have a woman that's the first legitimate candidate to become president, and she's only a few weeks away from possibly becoming that point, depending on how the election goes. We're not favoring one way or the other here, just saying that this is a big change in the tenor and the conversations that we've had over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and it's welcome as well. So we need to understand what's going on here, not pander to it, but really understand how this happened, why it's happening, and it's legitimate. Everyone should have the same opportunity, whether male, female, black, white, Asian, whatever it is, to be able to prove themselves on any stage. But this book in particular, focusing on women and the trailblazing women of our time. Joanne, thank you again for coming on the show. Congratulations on the book. And I have a feeling that you love this struggle so much that you might end up coming up with another one.
Well, you never know. Let's see how this one does.
Absolutely, I'm sure
it's officially published one day at this point.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again, and thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
You're welcome. Good night.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye-bye.